Should you have to give up financial security in order to achieve your dreams? Or even if you should, do you have to? We discuss this and more on this episode of The Overthinkers. Hello, thinking people's thinking people. Welcome to The Overthinkers, a home for people who love to have fun thinking deeply. I'm your host, Joseph Holmes, filmmaker, film critic, dreamy dreamer. And with me, as always, is my robustly realistic co-host.
Nathan Clarkson, actor, author, filmmaker, and small-time big dreamer.
Hey!
Hey!
That's like a movie title or a movie tagline.
Oh my gosh, I call it. No one else can take that. I'm going to make a movie or write a book. Everyone forget you heard that.
Dibs.
Since the right on that big dreamer example, you're proving the point now.
Yes.
All right. Well, yeah. Today we're going to be discussing, nice segue, if you should have to give up financial security in order to have your dreams, your dream job. So that's gonna be a fun topic. First, Nathan, if people enjoy our discussion and want to engage with more of our content and meet fellow overthinkers like themselves, where can they go?
They can go to theoverthinkersjournal.world, where they can find out more about their hosts, and they can send us all of their love and hate mail there. They can also go to our online private Facebook group, The Overthinkers, where we have almost 20,000 overthinkers like yourself getting into great discussions about all the fun stuff we talk about here, and there's tons of memes. Also, if you do enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving us a review. It really does help us so very much, and share with a friend.
Awesome. Yes, I have been starting to feel insecure because we haven't gotten as much hate mail as I would be expecting. So I'm wondering if we're not like as bold and edgy as I like to think that I am.
We need to have some more hot takes, I think. I think we need to do some more clickbaity hot takes. So in the future episodes, you will hear us saying really incendiary and controversial things just because we want more downloads and more hate.
Exactly. Because what's important is that we get a reaction, not that we're being truthful. That's what I've learned by being on the internet. Yes. That's the gospel truth. All right. Ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Cool. So, one of the most common struggles that you hear people discuss today is the frustration that they have with having to work at jobs that they hate rather than the job that they'd like to have. TikTok and YouTube are filled with people talking about the drudgery of their 9-to-5, which is getting in the way of them focusing on their passion, which is usually some kind of art, whether that's acting, or writing or painting. Experian defines financial security as the ability to afford your expenses, live comfortably on your income, and save for the future. Countless movies deal with characters being forced to choose between financial security and following their passion as well, whether it's Tick, Tick, Boom, Dead Poets Society, Fight Club, La La Land, American Underdog, or Fablemans. The problem is that people can't make enough money doing what they actually want to do, what they love to do, to give themselves the financial security that they want. According to Pew Research, only 7% of self-described artists, which include arts such as drawing or painting, creative writing, music, acting, dancing, filmmaking, or any other kind of artistic activity, make all of their annual income from art. Only 7%. Famous painter Raphael described this problem in the film The Agony and Ecstasy, where he said that as artists, we must convince people to pay us to do what we would do for free. Some people argue that this is an ideal that we should strive for, to reform society so that everyone can work only at jobs that they want to. Karl Marx envisioned such a society under communism, painting a picture of a man who, to paraphrase, was a farmer in the morning, an artist in the afternoon, and a blacksmith in the evening, as it struck his fancy. Some have even gone so far as to argue that having to work at jobs you dislike to support yourself is a unique evil to industrial capitalism. Others have pushed back that making a living doing something you love is a largely modern concept that only the very rich and privileged have had the opportunity to do. It's not something that you're entitled to. Certainly, you know, there are certain jobs that need to be done, even if nobody wants to do them. Yet they rarely have answers for how one should reconcile themselves to that reality. So, Nathan, we've talked about the balance of work and dreams before on the show. We had an interesting conversation recently that prompted us to take a stab at this from a different angle towards the struggle of having to do jobs you don't want to do rather than the ones you want to do and that frustration. So would you kind of like tee us up for that and what kind of prompted this this discussion.
Yeah, so I'm going to be coming at this from a slightly biased perspective, and not even biased, just narrower perspective, because I was born into a household of two people who followed their dreams to become writers, and they did so successfully. And that being my model, I've never really seen anyone familially have like a 9-to-5. I have always seen people kind of follow their dreams. And then myself, you know, I think I was talking to you about this the other day, Joseph. I think the only time I've always worked odd jobs, I've never not worked. I believe in hard work. But the only time that I've ever actually worked in what you consider a 9-to-5, I think it was like 3 to 5 months out of my life. It was not a long time. And so I don't come at this with tons of experience on the other end. I'm someone who, for the entirety of my career, I have been able to pay my bills. And sometimes not pay my bills, but I have worked almost entirely as an actor, an author, and a filmmaker. And I'm not saying that I haven't had other small side jobs, things like that, but the primary thrust of my energy, professional energy, has been into creative pursuits, what many people can kind of conceptualize as living your dreams.
So Nathan, are you one of the 7%?
I guess so. I never really thought of that, but it is nice to be in a small percentage, I guess.
We need to take his means of productive creativity.
I'm fine with that, as long as I get something in return. Which actually leads me into what we're going to talk about, because this is interesting. The way this conversation kind of came up is both just generally across social media, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it might be, there's this growing trend of just kind of a lot of people out there having this kind of particular conversation. And I've also noticed this for the past 15 years in my own particular life and the people around me in my more immediate world. And the conversation is something like this. I've always wanted to be an X, you know, insert travel blogger, artist, musician, actor, filmmaker, the list goes on and on and on. But I'm stuck doing this. Again, insert, you know, accountant, barista, whatever it might be. And there's there's a kind of incongruency between these things. I'm doing something I don't want to do, but I really want to do this thing. Now, when you ask them, well, why you're doing the thing you don't want to do, the typical answer is, well, because I have to pay rent, I have to eat food, this supports my life. And so, you know, they feel that this job is something that they have to do if they're going to eat, live, survive in the world. But there's a bitterness that comes with doing a job that they have to do that they aren't passionate about or don't desire to do, even though it's the job that supports their life. In their minds, they'd much rather do this job or you know, have this pursuit where they get to do things that they really, really enjoy and seem cool and fun and are passionate about. And this makes total sense, by the way. You know, I think it's really natural for most of us humans to have these big, big dreams. And I think it's also very, very natural to have this negative or even embittered disappointing look with the reality that we're having to do these things that we don't really enjoy to survive. Now, I'm going to come at this from a slightly different angle. So I want you to know, if you're one of these people who has big dreams that you find you're doing something that you don't enjoy to support your life, I'm going to speak to you from someone who has almost entirely just followed his dreams and kind of give a little more insight into what that world looks like and what the trade-offs are. Because a lot of what I don't think is going on here is that every pursuit of life, every journey or path you take comes with its own trade-offs. Now you have to, you know, you went for, you being the general, the person who goes for the 9-to-5 job, the regular job with a schedule and a boss and all of that. That is something that, whether or not you like it emotionally, you did value something in that choice to take that job. You valued a regular paycheck. You valued the security that regular, consistent, reliable, that comes with a reliable income. And so whether or not you emotionally value it, you didn't mentally value it to the place where you say, well, this is a smart thing to do because I know I'll be paid and I'll pay rent and I'll eat food. So there was a part of you that made a choice, whether or not it was a conscious choice, it was a choice. Now, you know, some of us were pressured into things by parents, by family, by social, you know, kind of pushing and pressure. But even with that there, it is a choice we made to take the job that would give us that security. And I want to talk about that for a second. Security is not nothing. I think in a modern Western society where most of us, almost the entirety of us, have water coming out of faucets, most of us are living under roofs and in typically safe places. Most of us have cars that we can get from A to B, or live in a city like New York where you have public transportation. Most of us are down the street from grocery stores, you know, all these kinds of things. So we start losing the value for normal things because we've been so exposed to and used to them, right? You know, a prophet is without honor in his own town. What's the thing about you learn to love things when you don't have them? But a lot of us have never not had things. We don't learn to love the beauty and the value of consistency and expectation and reliability of provision. And, you know, we can kind of dive into Maslow's hierarchy of needs in a little bit. But, you know, that's kind of one of the basic things. Before you can even get to the higher tier things, you have to know you're going to be able to eat that night. You have to know that you're going to be able to sleep in a place you're not going to get attacked. And this is something that most of us take for granted, particularly here in the West, that we have these things. And so I think that that lack of realization of how important that is has caused us to now start dreaming about all the things we don't have. But through most of human history, if you go back, not even, I was going to say, you know, 1,000 years, go back 100 years. You know, again, I reference playing the game Red Dead Redemption all the time, and Joseph was talking about it. But if you go back just 100 years to the turn of the 20th century, what you see is people, I mean, like living off the land, struggling to find food. If there wasn't rain for, you know, a month or something, like weather does weird things, then your crops wouldn't grow. Then you're not going to eat throughout the winter. And then winter comes and you're going, can I survive in this cabin that has no insulation? And oh my gosh, the wood is wet and I can't start a fire. And oh my gosh, we're running out of venison. And if I'm going to eat, I'm going to have to go hunt. I mean, most of human history has been brutal. And just a fight for survival. And so most people throughout human history, if they looked at the life you led, they would think you're living in heaven. Wait, you have water that comes out of a faucet? And this is something too, just kind of put this in perspective. Many people around the world today would think you live in heaven just by getting to have water, by getting to have food, by having canned goods that you can go to the store and eat, by being able to order on Grubhub. That is an amazing thing to most of every human who's ever lived. So why doesn't it feel amazing to us? Okay, now we're going to go to the other side. I do think there's this intrinsic thing to matter, to do something purposeful in the world, to leave your mark, to spend your time and energy in limited life, because we are mortal beings, doing something that is actually important. And I think that's a good and natural thing. For most of human history, that has the quote importance has come from trying to build a survivable place. But now that we have that, we're moving on to, I want to do something that's important in this one particular way. When we live in a society that tends to, because we're used to the survival thing, we've had those for a long time, we tend to deem very particular things as important or valuable. Now, we just finished watching the Oscars, right? And this was talked about, at least in our circles, but really around the world, people talked about what movies won. And even aside from what movies won the award, it's what were they wearing to the thing? That looks important, right? We hear the stories from behind the scenes. Oh, these actors were doing this. We even hear the directors get, you know, in front of the mics and talk about what a purposeful and value it is to tell this story that means so much. And we change the world. We told the story. We obsess about people like Taylor Swift, and she's getting applauded for by tens of thousands of fans. And so we start looking at our life in comparison to what is important is having survival, and in comparison to these things that we're constantly bombarded by, particularly in celebrity culture, and going, that's what an important person does, and my life doesn't look like that, so I must not be important. We even do this, by the way, interpersonally, and we could have, there's plenty of stats, I'm going to shut up in a second and let Joseph jump in here, but there's plenty of statistics that say that, you know, the social media has made us really discontent with our own lives because we're constantly exposed to people who live lives that leading better than ours. So, you know, just think of the person in your mind. I have like 5. Don't worry. I'm not excusing myself from this. We all have this proclivity. But think of the person in your mind who went on that trip that you didn't need to go on, who got that partner that you never got the chance to have and so beautiful or handsome. Think of the person who got that accolade. That you have never had anything like that. Think of that person who got to make something and everybody liked that thing they made, but you didn't get that. And here you are serving coffee, crunching numbers, whatever it might be. And so that's kind of where I'm going to leave it. That's where discontentment comes from. And I, that would be, you know, there's, that's where some of the discontentment comes from in some of these areas. And I think that it is important to kind of look back and see how valuable security is and why that's a natural human element and why it's a natural human element to want more and to be purposeful and live a life. So I kind of, I just threw a lot of stuff out there. Hopefully that kind of sets up this conversation as to why this is a difficult thing. And ultimately we're going to dive into why do we have to choose? Do we have to choose? And what do I do? Do I just stay in this job forever because it gets me money? Or do I go follow my dreams? And we're going to look at the downsides and trade-offs of both. But Joseph, I want to hear your kind of insight into this. And you're no better than me because you're a freelance writer. So we really should have had someone who has a regular job on.
Well, so that's, yeah, I mean, that's it's definitely, that's one of the interesting things. Yes, the two of us are in a position where we are actually getting to do the things that everybody else says that they want to do. And I think that you make an interesting point, which is that use experience. We've talked about this a lot in kind of in our off time. Experiencing people who have, you know, just one degree or another envy your life and lifestyle because you get to, you know, you get to be an actor, you get to be a filmmaker who's making movies and you're doing things. And when you talk about what you're doing, it sounds very exciting. And it is. And, you know, this was, you know, your passion, what you wanted to do, and you got to do some approximation of it. And it is interesting to hear you talk about, because when we have someone else who's living a life that we believe we want to have, it is easy to not recognize the trade-offs that come with it. You know, it is easy to say, like, if I had what they had, I would be happy. But the truth is, and I would like to hear you talk about this a little bit, you know, more, is you experience the trade-offs on the other side. And I experience the trade-offs on the other side. You know, the fact that I have pursued, you know, a career that is where it's a freelance writer, like that's my full-time job is being a freelance writer, means that I don't have certain things that other friends have, and I'm able to see kind of the trade-offs involved and experience in a very tangible way the trade-offs of that. Now, I have always kind of, I've had 9-to-5 jobs. Unlike Nathan, I'm one of the common people who have had.
Yes, you're very, you're very like the down-to-earth, you know, Joe next door. Everyone's gonna
tell you. I want a gallon of milk cost. Yes.
Yeah, Joseph out here with a hammer and a factory. That's totally you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No. But I've even, again, you know, I've worked, you know, movie theater, I've worked, you know, in the, you know, healthcare industry, and I've worked in, you know, in marketing and stuff like that. And I have worked at places where it's like, okay, it's a 9-to-5, you clock in, you clock out, and things like that. But I haven't experienced, for the most part, the existential dread that a lot of other of my friends have, because I've always had kind of this level of insanity, you know, as part of me that says, like, well, I'm doing this to survive until I get X place. You know, I'm doing this. This is to fuel my art that I'm doing. I'm working on right now, or that I'm going to do in the future, my writing, my whatever, things like that. I've had that. And so I didn't have the whole, oh, this is going to be my future for the rest of my life, and I'm going to, that I can see. But I have had times where like that. I mean, again, we've, you know, I've talked to you about, like, you know, last year, as I felt like I was stagnating in my writing, and as, you know, I'm trying to make my movie, and that was kept, problems kept going on with that. I actually did kind of experience that, oh, maybe the 9-to-5 where I don't get to do the dream job thing I want to do is just going to be the whole rest of my life. And, you know, that felt awful. Like that was a depressing kind of future to go on. You know, you and I had conversations about that. And, you know, one of the things that I did is I said, oh, okay, what do I have to do? And I really pushed into the freelance writing thing. To see, like, because, like, if I can do this, I can be excited about what is happening next. And, you know, by God's grace, you know, and believe me, there are stories about, like, how God orchestrated things that, like, are, you know, I can talk about, you know, we can talk about sometime we're doing an episode on God's sovereignty. But, you know, I did lean into that, and I did that, and I've gotten to a place. But what are also some of the things that are going on? I am living in an apartment with two other people. You know, I'm not married. Like, you know, and for a lot of the, you know, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is because I've been spending time, all this time, trying to make sure that this, I'm doing this. You know, there's, and I look at some of the other friends I have who have 9-to-5s that they talk about that they hate, but sometimes they've had to buy me dinner. You know, sometimes they've had to, sometimes I've looked at them and I've seen them get married and have children, you know, and because I, and look at, and some of the posters, pictures they post, you know, on Instagram and stuff like that. And I look at, oh my gosh, look at, and I'm envious of them. And I think that there is an element that happens that people don't always appreciate, even though they made the choice that in some cases they really do value more. They don't always appreciate the ways in which they would be envying themselves if they weren't in the situation, if they weren't in the situation that they're in right now. And I think it is partly, you alluded to this, there's a principle in psychology called, I may be screwing up the name because I'm me, but mnemonic desire, which is that sometimes what we desire is based on what we see other people telling us and give the cues of us we should desire. And a lot of times we do, again, because everybody's talking about the Oscars, it feels like that's more important. We don't actually see the fact that we're creating a world of stability that makes it possible for artists to do what they do and, you know, is equally valuable, if not more so, because it makes it possible for Nathan and me to do what we do, is even more valuable. I mean, like C.S. Lewis has talked about the fact that, like, you know, look, in order for people, like artists, to have an audience, people have to exist. So, like, having a family and kids, like, is kind of slightly more important than the things that artists do. But we don't always often feel that value in that time. And I think that's one of the tragedies of life. And I'll jump it back to you in a second so we can get a bit more detailed and practical. But is that one of the tragedies is that we don't have as much of an equal distribution of glorifying the things that everybody, ordinary people do. To make and to show how beautiful and valuable that is. Because what? The people who can glorify things are the artists. And what do artists do? They glorify what they chose because that's what we know. And so there ends up being that kind of thing that happens. I think that's a tragedy, is that people can't often see the value and the beauty of the choice that they've made of security also. So anyway, there's more to talk about there, but that's where I wanted to start that discussion. So where would you jump off from there?
Yeah, I'm going to jump off of a couple things you said. This is great. I think we have this interesting kind of conception that envy only flows one way. It's a one-way street. And as you alluded to, what a lot of people, you know, could we so, like you're talking about mnemonic desire, we've so built up live your dreams. If you're not living your dreams, you're not living a good life, that we imagine that all of the desire or jealousy or envy or whatever those words you want to use flows from people who have to work jobs they don't like into the people who are, quote, following their dreams. But the reality is, as you've alluded to, and I'm going to, is that there is huge trade-offs. And we assume that because we don't have a full picture of what it actually means to follow your dreams and the drawbacks that come with them. We have this very narrow picture. Most of it is based off of this tiny substrat of people. And if you know, it's funny when I tell people I'm an actor, when we say actor, who pops into our mind, right? It's Brad Pitt, who lives in 17 mansions and has, you know, $2 billion. I don't know what he's worth. So when it's like, I want to follow my dreams as being an actor, well, great, you can do that. But there's a lot of, Brad Pitt isn't the culmination of what it means to be an actor, live a life as an actor. It's actually much more difficult in a different kind of world. And I have found myself multiple times looking at the people in my life who chose a different path, who chose that 9-to-5, who chose security. And I've had deep envy of them. As Joseph pointed out, this world of, quote, following your dreams comes with huge drawbacks and sacrifices. And those aren't always apparent when we see the tabloids or the Instagram posts or the TV shows about movie stars. And we kind of conceptualize, well, those are the people who follow their dreams, and I'm working as a barista or an accountant. No. That's not exactly how it works. And I'll explain why that is in a minute. But the reality is I've experienced deep, deep envy and jealousy and longing for security, because here's reality is most of my, actually not most, the entirety of my professional career, I've never known where my next paycheck is coming from. Will I be able to pay rent in 3 months? Can I save up any money, to make sure to afford those possibilities, those potentialities happening? I need to make sure I live in a tiny, tiny little apartment that's not glamorous in any way, shape or form. So just in case something goes wrong, I won't overspend. So I'm going to live very humbly. I'm going to make most of my meals at home. I'm going to have to hustle every single day and look and email and never stop. So there is no guaranteed check that shows up at my door. It's something I have to go fight for and seek out and search and work really, 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 really hard for. There's a kind of conception that if you become an artist and follow your dream, you don't have to work anymore. You just get to do what you like. 99% of my, quote, fall in my dreams is not me doing what I like. You know, I am on set for a day, you know, if I get a role. And I understand why people can think that, because you go to my page, you look, go to my Facebook page, you're going to see me post an article I wrote the time I was on set. You're going to see about, oh, I, you know, did this or I went here. I'm not going to post the 99% of time that I sat on my couch and emailed someone and sent in. You know, I recently looked, I think I've sent in, I think I'm closing in on 1,000 auditions in my time of being an actor. And I've booked a handful of those, but I'm not posting the 1,000 auditions. I'm posting the handful of times that I've actually booked something. But the reality is it took 1,000 auditions, most of which, like, you know, take an hour to complete. That's 1,000 hours I've spent just trying to get a role that's only worked a few times. And so I have spent a lot of time in my life going, wow, it'd be nice to live in a little bigger house. Man, it would be nice to know that there's going to be a paycheck at the end of the month. Man, it would be nice to have a schedule I can rely upon. Man, it would be nice to not have to hustle and wake up every single day and hopefully someone will give me a job, or hopefully someone will take my book, or hopefully someone will accept my article, whatever it might be. And then the constant rejection. No, they didn't. Man, it sounds nice to just have that guarantee and assurance of that I will be cared for, and the people I love will be cared for, and people I care for will be cared for. So there is this incomplete picture that people have when they say, I want to live my dreams, because they kind of conceptualize it in a very small, narrow view of how it actually looks like. 99% of artists who are following their dreams don't live Brad Pitt's or Taylor Swift's life. They live the life more like mine, which is actively hunting in a lot of effort to be able to do tiny things here or there. And I think that people conceptualize, well, I have to work all this. At least you get to work on something you love. And that I do understand, right? I think you talked about that there isn't an equal distribution in praise. And we talked about this before in church. When people say, I want to work in ministry, they don't mean they want to be a facilities director at the church. They mean they want to be the worship pastor, because the worship pastor gets praise. And here's the thing. No one would go to that church if that church wasn't clean and well-maintained and taken care of. But the facilities manager gets zero praise. Who gets clapped for and gets to stand on a stage and have people tell how talented they are every single week? Well, the worship leader or the pastor, the people who get the praise. But the level of importance between a facilities manager and a worship pastor, I would argue, are roughly the same. I think you need both of these people to have a church that runs well. And the same thing is true of kind of this breakdown between dreams and, you know, the normal job, the 9-to-5 is, when you look at art, particularly a lot of dreams really revolve around art. When I write something or get to be in a movie or you know, someone who writes a song or paints a painting, they're getting to, that's really kind of an extension of themselves, right? So when that painting gets praised, they're getting praised. But when you make a good coffee, I mean, or do a great spreadsheet, you're not getting the same kind of praise as the painter. That's just something you do. The painting is kind of a metaphor for who you are. And so the artist is going to get praised for who they are. Well, the worker is going to get praised for what they did. But the problem is, what you don't understand is that a lot of the artists, most of the artist's life is him doing things, not him just painting, getting his paintings out there, getting them to be seen by people, having it rejected. Anyway, I've gone over that. But really what I'm getting to is that there is a trade-off here and that it's not always easily apparent. And it's not going to be apparent even if you follow me on Instagram. All you're going to see is the best moments of my life. And I promise you that is 0.0001% of my life. And yes, you know, come at me, tell me I should post more authentic, whatever. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to post the cool moments of my life. But I can tell you that 99% of it is like currently right now, I'm sitting on a couch in my pajamas. This is not glamorous. I'm sitting in a small apartment in a really expensive city. I am spending most of my day before and after this emailing people looking for work, trying to get my out there, really working hard. And there's a huge chance a lot of it will get rejected or I'm not going to get emailed back. So what I'm saying is, work is a part of both things. So if you are fantasizing about be following your dreams because it's less work, that's untrue. And if you are fantasizing about, but I do understand the idea about wanting to be appreciated and loved more for what you do. And I think that this is something we can kind of move into. And Joseph knows a lot about this, which is there has been this sociological move that removes people, removes people's work from praise and the affect of their work. But Joseph, kind of talk, walk us through that. You know, in the old days, we had, if you hunted something, you saw who it fed. And so there's this natural fulfilling element of, oh my gosh, this did matter. I'm feeding my family. Yeah, it took all day to hunt this elk or whatever it is, but I see this results. But nowadays, we don't as readily see the results of our work. Kind of talk us through that, maybe why that is contributing to our dissatisfaction at our current workplaces, and as well as the fantasies we have about getting to do something we actually like.
Yeah, no, so there's a lot of really interesting aspects to this. So one of the things we broke it, so we're breaking down, just kind of like walking through some of this, because we've talked sort of, we've done a lot of anecdotes mixed in with kind of our discussion. But you know, there is this, you know, everybody is having this, you know, work versus dreams kind of angst today. And part of it is, you know, comparing yourself to other people without knowing their whole story. It's like, oh, I want to have their life because it seems like, you know, you're not seeing the trade-offs. But part of it is also like, you know, oh, I would at least like to be doing something I love, and you apparently are doing something you love. Again, I have to, you know, the person who's listening to us will say, okay, fine, fair enough. Both the, you know, the person following their dreams, the person following a paycheck, both have to work hard. But you get to work hard doing something you love also. That's fair enough. That's it. That's a totally fair kind of pushback. But one of the questions is, okay, you know, maybe you could say that, you know, you do want to be an artist and stuff like that. But then you get into this question, it's like, why is it that it's only kind of the artists that it seems like are doing something they love? And why is it that the, you know, we have this idea that the 9 to 5 or stuff like that is intrinsically less enjoyable and stuff like that? One of the reasons, again, you have to ask yourself these questions, like, do I actually want to be somebody who follows dreams, or is this something that's going on with me? One of the things is, and again, it's funny bringing up Karl Marx a lot today, is funny, but even though he's awful guy who did sit, who wrote awful things, he had a couple of interesting points of analysis. One of the probably the biggest one, the one that I think he hit the nail on the head was this, which is the fact that is his concept of alienation, which is the idea that when you back in the old days, again, when you were in small villages, you know, if you went out and hunted something, as Nathan alluded to, you got the credit for the hunting and the catching of that meat. And because there were fewer people that you knew, it was easier to get praise for what you did. People actually knew you. You know, we've moved into an industrial society and a stranger society where you never see the results of your work, where you say, oh, okay, I have caught this meat and I see these people are fed by it and I'm seeing them eat it. You don't see that. Or I've, you know, made a blacksmith and I've made the sword that I see somebody else in my village wearing. Now you make a widget that is used by somebody you never get to see, and they never see you, and so they can never be grateful to you for it. And that causes a crisis of meaningfulness, where you don't see that your work that you're doing is meaningful. And so one of the things, for somebody who says, I actually do value, you know, having stability and having a higher income so that I can have a family and so I can support a community. One of the things is like, why is it that you're feeling like that work is not valuable? One of the reasons is because you're not actually seeing the tangible effects of your work on other people. So it doesn't feel meaningful. Meaningfulness, there's an interesting, I've been looking, reading a lot about meaningfulness. Meaningfulness is really interesting because meaningfulness is about being able to see consistent, tangible effects on others, lasting effects on others that you value. And it's often that, you know, when you're doing artistic endeavor, you do see the effects because it's like, you know, again, Kevin Feige, who makes the Marvel movies, people have talked about this. He loves sitting in the audience and watching people laugh and watching people enjoy themselves. That's why kind of Marvel movies have moved in the direction of a lot of jokes and a lot of these punching moments, because Kevin Feige likes those moments because he likes seeing audience reactions. And again, like, you know, I would say this, when I, you know, like say, oh, I'm a film critic, or, oh, I've, you know, written this thing, or I've got a podcast. I like seeing people's eyes light up. You know, that's something that's going on. Why is it that we don't have those things? It's with an ordinary jobs, partly because it's directed by somebody else. So like there's all this hierarchy where it's always directed by somebody. So we don't feel like we get to have self-expression kind of involved in it. And another part is because we don't see the actual meaningfulness of it. And, you know, this is also kind of where you get the kind of mommy blogger and kind of like people showing their kids on social media and stuff like that, is because people are getting to say, oh, they can see the effects of their work. It's not just kind of lost to what's going on in their family. Other people get to see it and see what's beautiful about it. So if we're talking about like, okay, why is it that everybody's like, man, I is caught between making a living and following dreams? One is because we don't actually value the making a living piece because, like you said, it's so, you know, it's, we take it for granted. And it's like I was talking about, it's so diffused that we don't see how valuable and meaningful it is. The other thing is that we have artists who are always praised because that's what's getting attention, because, you know, we have the attention economy, because they're creating something that's not. And I think so before I would say, before you resent or envy what we're doing, figure out if what you're envying is the actual artistic endeavor or the dream thing, or what you're envying is something that you should have in your job already, but is kind of our modern society has taken out of. Because again, like this thing is that, like, you know, people who blame industrial capitalism for having to work do not know what they're talking about. But people who blame industrial capitalism for the alienation of us not being able to see the meaningfulness of our work are 100% spot on. So that's where I would say, I think, so I wanted us to go for these. So like people say, okay, fine. I understand, you know, that, you know, there's a trade-offs involved in this and everybody's life is hard. It's like, okay, I understand that there's something that I'm missing in the value of my work that that may be partly why I've done those things. I've looked at that and I've examined that. I'm still feeling unsatisfied. How do I practically make choices to feel like I'm enjoying my life and my work and life are not just drudgery? So I want to talk about that, move in that direction. But first, I want to give you time to kind of like jump off of some of that.
Yeah, this is great. And I think I'm excited to kind of wrap this episode up with some, okay, well, how do I actually feel that my life has meaning and purpose? And all these things that are natural to the human makeup, and they're good to want, but maybe won't always be realized in, quote, following your dreams, or maybe following your dreams is kind of a misnomer. And that's what I want to touch on real quick is, you know, we're talking about these ideas to live an ordinary life of security or follow your dreams. And a question I want to ask, you know, I have talked to a lot of people throughout my time in Hollywood, in New York, you know, quote, following dreams. And I am a little plug here. I'm a certified creative life coach who I talk to young artists who are going in or looking at a life pursuing creativity, be that music, art, acting, film, whatever it might be. And so I do have some experience here in seeing how people's psychology works when they're looking and desiring this kind of world. One of the things I would ask is, when you say you want to follow your dreams, is it actually your dream, or what is your dream? Because very often what I've noticed is people want to follow something that seems like it gets a lot of attention and seems like a lot of fun, but one, they're not even actually that good at it. They've done no work to become good at it. You know, you might have a dream to be a painter. Have you spent your life drawing? Are you naturally inclined to that? Do you have a natural gift? You might want to be a singer. Do you have a natural musical gift and an ear? Can you sing well? Can you hear harmonies? You know, forget about just the work it takes to become a singer and all the emails and all that and all the rejection, but just, do you have the natural skill? So a lot of people, when they say, I want to follow my dreams, it's not even a dream you should have because you're not good at it. And I don't mean that meanly. I'm not good at a lot of things. You know, I talked earlier in the episode about some people feel like they're kind of forced. They didn't have a choice to go into the things they did. I'm an accountant and I didn't really feel like I had a choice. It's just what I was supposed to do. And here I am. Yeah, I'm making money, but I don't feel very fulfilled. Here's the thing. This is not everyone's story, but because of limitations I had with my mental health, it made it actually impossible for me to go the traditional route. So I didn't have that choice of going to college, then getting the 9-to-5, then working as an intern, then getting the, you know, partner, whatever it might be. That was not an ability. You know, I worked at Starbucks for 2 weeks and got fired. I've been fired from a lot of jobs, and it's not because I'm a bad worker. It's not that, but I have some pretty severe learning disabilities and mental illness, which really, really made it difficult to have that. So I had to look at the things that I had to do. And the few things that I was good at was the creative pursuits. So my creative pursuits, while I do love them and passionate about them, were really my only option for a career. The only things that are good at, the only things that I had the ability to be good at or getting training to be good at. So when you look at your dreams and go, I have the dream of this, are you good at it? Is this something you actually should have as your quote, following your dream? Because very often I've seen many, many times what ends up happening is people have these dreams, but there's two things that kind of go on. Is one, they're not naturally inclined towards that dream. They don't actually have a natural talent. I've seen this in many, many times in Hollywood. And we see this watching American Idol, right? Well, I want to be a singer. And they sing and they're terrible. And, you know, all the entire nation laughs at them, which is not very nice, guys. But it's kind of a good thing that they realize early on, this is not something I'm good at, because then they can go find the thing they are good at that will be fulfilling to them, that they will get praised for. So very often your dream is something that won't actually work out anyway because you're not good at it. And that sounds so harsh, but it is honest, and it will protect you from a lot of wasted years. I've seen a lot of people waste a lot of years pursuing, quote, their dreams, or even just fantasizing about pursuing their dreams. And it's something that they're not even made to do. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think a lot of people are interested in being an actor and who aren't interested in the journey to becoming an actor. Who doesn't want to get praised for, you know, being in this movie with that person and getting awards? Of course, everybody wants that. But I've seen a lot of people move to Hollywood who are interested in being actors. But when they look at the work it takes to become an actor, the amount of classes, the amount of auditions, the amount of rejection, the amount of days spent on your computer just looking for the next thing, the amount of, you know, guys, early in my career, I spent 4 or 5 years being a background performer, by the way. So a background performer is someone who walks as a blur in the background of scenes. I did that for 5 years. Now, when I come
you are the best at it.
And I was super good at it. but I actually know a lot of people who move to Hollywood and they say, I refuse to do background work. Well, why? That's not my dream. Oh, then you're not interested in becoming an actor. By the way, Brad Pitt did background work. Just a little side note here. He was actually interested. He was not a Nepo baby. He's actually interested in becoming an actor. So he did the thing it took to become an actor, which was for years be a background. And you can actually see him and you can look it up and see the movie that he was a background extra in. Same with a lot of actors, most actually. You move to Hollywood and you sign up at Central Casting. But I've noticed that people, a lot of people I talk to, when they talk to me, particularly in a coaching situation, they say, I'm not interested in signing up at Central Casting being a background actor. I can almost with 100% certainty predict that they're not going to become an actor because they're not interested in doing the work it takes to become an actor, in the humiliating, humble, hard, gratuitously mundane work that it takes to get in front of the camera. You know, as a person with lines and a part, you know, all the things we imagine, they're not interested in that. They're interested in just being an actor. And that goes for being a singer. That goes for being an author. You know, are you willing to write, you know, 40 unpublished, self-published books? Probably not. But if you are, that's the way. Then you're interested in actually in the work. So, you know, that's another aspect. But getting to the practicality of, okay, thanks. So this doesn't help me at all. What do I do now, right? Because we've talked about this. Well, I think there's a few things that I encourage you to do. If you still want to feel that purposefulness in the work you do, then this is a few things I would do. And you don't maybe have the ability to follow dreams or that the dreams that you think. One, really investigate what your dream actually is. Are you dreaming of being famous, of being rich, of having cool experience to show off, posting things on Instagram? Or is your dream something you actually just love and really, really enjoy? Number two, I would ask yourself, so a lot of these are kind of Socratic and you ask yourself these, you can kind of evaluate. Number two, what is it that you're actually good at? Are you dreaming of something that naturally corresponds with your skills? Because if you are, then chase it, but do be prepared for the next thing, which is, are you willing to work hard without any pay, security, adoration for a long period of time? Because if you are, and you actually are good at this, that's what it's going to take. Almost always. It is a vast minority. I got to Hollywood and heard all these stories. Oh, this person got cast in this movie because, you know, just randomly got seen by a casting director in Starbucks. That's not you. That's not me. That will not happen. It happened to one person and they probably lied about it. So, you know, are you ready? Even if you are good at it, you know, ask yourself, am I good at this? But let's say you are. Let's say you've seen that you have a skill here. Are you ready for the work? And then be willing to acknowledge, if you're going to chase that dream, what you're going to give up. Because I promise you, if you have security, if you have that check coming in, if you have a home, if you have children, if you have a family, those are beautiful and wonderful things you should be thankful for. And all of those things, don't leave your family to follow your dreams. That's one thing I will say. Do not leave your family to follow dreams. A family is more important than a small acting role in a TV show. I promise you it is. But be aware of what it's going to cost you. You know, you might think that, who cares? I get a check every month. Who cares? I have a house, or who cares? I have whatever. Those things you're taking for granted might just be the things that you wish you'd never given up if you take that choice to go for the less secure route. But this is the last one I'll say, is there is a hybrid model that I encourage, particularly if you're going to start, if you are having these things. And here's a few different versions of what this hybrid model looks at. One, don't quit your day job.
Literally.
That is, we've all heard this. Don't quit the day job, but start using your day job to fuel your nighttime pursuits. And by that, I mean, hey, even if it's only 5 minutes a day that you get to work on your novel, write those three paragraphs. After a couple of years, you'll have a whole novel and you can decide if that's something you want to pursue. So even where you are right now, I promise you, you have 10, 20, maybe even a couple of hours, particularly if you're single, don't have kids, you can invest right where you are now while your life is being supported. No, it won't be a full sale. I'm chasing this and stuff, but you can start that process of investigating if this is something you enjoy doing and pursuing. Start testing the waters, and then maybe the day will come. You're like, okay, I'm quitting the job and I'm going for this. That's great, but test the waters. Try that hour a day. See how you like it. Send that manuscript to somebody. See what they say about it. So that's one of the hybrid models. The next hybrid model is to find, I don't know what you call them in the real world, we call them actor jobs, which is find a job that supports your art. And Joseph talked a little bit about this. It wasn't the main thrust of what he was pursuing as a career, but he did find some regularity and security in it. So, you know, Joseph, when you were working like the healthcare industry, you found, yes, it took up some of your time, but it left you enough time to actively pursue the other things. So you had this a bit of a hybrid. All right, I have a regular check coming in. I also have enough time to keep on pursuing this thing. And as far as I remember, even while you're working there, you were actually at the job still working on things. So there is this hybrid model mentality, but I do encourage testing the waters before you jump into either one. So I'll stop there. I want to hear some of my, your practical things. If I think of anything else, I'll throw them in after you. But those are things I would encourage, is ask yourself those questions. Am I actually good at this? What is my dream actually? Is it the image of Brad Pitt, or do I want to be a working actor that takes a lot of work? Be prepared for how much work it will take, and understand what you're trading off. Oh, I will add one more. Before you do any of this, and this is a biblical thing, this is something that's found in Psalms, and I have to do this, by the way, when I start finding myself envious or angry or bitter, is start being thankful for what you do have. And maybe you want something more. That's okay. You're allowed to. But start being thankful. You go through the list of things in your life that you have that that a lot of other people don't have or haven't had, and be thankful for them. And then start doing this evaluating work into, should I do this or that? So, okay, Joseph, I'll let you jump in here.
Yeah, those are all very good. I think one of the things you have to start out with is the mentality that first start out with is, life is not, I am not entitled to get what I want in life. And I sort of start with that, which is that we have one of the things, again, I am a person who, again, I love doing creative things. I mean, the other day, again, I'm working on my feature film right now. And, you know, I was working on this script, tightening up, making changes to it, and doing the post-production side, working on the pre-production aspects of it. And I remember man, right now, what I feel, I don't feel like I care. I feel so happy right now, where it's like, even if nobody else loves this, I'm enjoying so much doing this. And so that's one of those things where, like, I know this is something that's I want to be doing. But also, if I make this and nobody else loves this, nobody else is obligated to love this. There is a sense in which we have where we say, I love making art or love making things, and therefore other people, I have the right to demand that other people support me to it. And that's not the universe we live in. If you're a Christian, God does not exist to make whatever it is you desire come true. You exist to work toward his purposes and his plan, whatever those are, whatever you can discern those are. And a big part of the ones that he tells us to do are love God and love others and work towards other people's good. So the, you know, first thing I do say is, like, find out, like you said, do you want to write or do you want to be a writer? Do you want to act or do you want to be an actor? Because if, find out what you actually do love, and but then be also be okay with the fact that you are not entitled to get there without trade-offs or to demand that other people serve you in that. So that, you know, your passion is not you're not entitled to have that subsidized by other people. So have to ask, is there a way that I can do what I love while serving other people? And that can either be, there's a concept called the hedgehog concept. It's like what your vocation is, what your calling is three things. It's what you love passionately, what you can be the best in the world at, and what you can convince other people to pay you for. And so find, you know, what it is you love. Is there a way that you can actually get other people to, you know, pay you to do that? And you can be good at, and you can pay you to do that. And then pursue that and try that and do those things. Do the hybrid models, do those things. I would also then say, so first of all, discover that. Discover if you're actually valuing being valued for your work or the work itself. And then find the best combination of those you can while pursuing the thankfulness of actually valuing things that matter. Actually valuing the ability to pay for your friend's food. You know, one of the things I can't always do is support other people in their endeavors because I don't have extra income or things like that. So learn to value some of those things, and find people, you know, who are actually valuing those things, valuing things that you do in your life. Is an important thing. And again, I've looked around, you know, I've looked around, and there's not a lot of people who are actually talking about how it's beautiful to be taking on responsibility and doing humble life and humble things. You know, again, I've just read the one person that I've seen do this consistently and do it in a beautiful way is, and I searched around, particularly one person I saw do it early on was Jordan Peterson, who actually said you know, these said, you know, people go to jobs they hate every day. And because of that, the lights come on. And so I would say, go seek out people who are going to actually value those things and help you value those things. So that's what I kind of, I would say is that, you know, find out what you love, find out how to actually value things that are, you know, worth valuing, even if other people are not, and seek out people and find out that hybrid of what that looks like to do that. And also, it's okay to have hobbies. Like, again, if it's okay to actually have artistic endeavors that you love for the sake of loving it, that other people don't pay you for. And, you know, finding the time to do that. Again, if people are not going to pay you to be a poet, like, for example, like, there's a chance that you're going to make money off of acting or something like that. You're not going to stop your poetry, but you can still make poetry and make the world a better place and publish.
People only knew how many unpaid films I've been in. Yeah. How the minority is me getting paid for my films. Guys, I was unpaid in Joseph's film. I'm still waiting for that, my actor fee. And he has not sent me my actor fee for the short film that I was in his a couple of years ago. And let me tell you, I will be pressing charges.
Pressing charges. Yes, exactly. And I'll countersue you for
defamation.
Yes. Anyway, so that's how I wrap it up. And I hope that has been inspiring in some way to think about this and to be grateful for your own life and the things that you have valuable. Nathan, do you want to say anything to wrap up? One more thing.
I'll give my one last wrap up thing is your desire is valid. And I don't want to say that. I probably should have said that earlier. Your desire for purpose, meaningfulness, value, that to use your time well on things that you love and that feel important, that is so, so valid. You were created to want to spend your life while you're here, you're 100 years on something important, and you feeling the frustration that that's not happening, that's a totally, totally valid thing. So I want to validate that feeling. I also want to encourage you to investigate and say, is this thing I'm dreaming or fantasizing about, will that actually be the answer to my desire? You know, humans are just amazing at building up fantasiacal things in our head that we think are going to satisfy us and don't. And very often they hurt us. And so one antidote to that is being thankful. Look for the things to be thankful in your life right now. Do you have a wife? Do you have a husband? Do you have kids? Do you have a home? Do you have friends? Do you have food? Be thankful for those. And you might find a little less discontentment and frustration in your life. But again, do the investigative work to not just say, I want to follow dreams, but really say, what is my real longing and desire? And what really will be the answer to that? Because there's you know, that discontentment, I promise you, living in Hollywood, this is a town of people following their dreams. And I promise you, there's just as much discontentment here as there is in the small town where, you know, the person's dreaming of becoming an actor, artist, dancer, entrepreneur, whatever it is. There's just as much discontentment here. It's just differently focused, where that person has a discontentment and let's say envy or jealousy or desire that goes, sideways as opposed to up.
Horizontal, vertical.
Yes, thank you. That is horizontal. You're looking across the horizontal plane at someone else is doing something you think you want. But once you get to the other side of that plane, now your discontentment just goes up. And believe me, all I see are actors who are more successful. All I see is authors who have sold more books. So the discontentment never goes away. And ultimately, that's only going to be satisfied when you really do the investigative work to say, what is it that really will fill me? Is it pursuing this dream? Maybe. Probably not, though, because I got to tell you, I still have discontentment and I still want and I still desire, even though I'm someone who's, quote, pursuing their dreams. So really do that investigative work in your mind and your heart and your soul. Be thankful for what you have. Just be thankful for what you got. I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. All right. Yeah. Hopefully that helps.
All right. Now on to blesses and curses, where we take a work of art, media, or resource that on our topic and we recommend it, i.e. bless it or diss it, i.e. curse it. So, Nathan, what are your blesses and curses today?
I'm going to bless a little book by Saint Therese, a great little saint who died very young, actually. And, you know, they read her journals. And it's called The Little Way. And essentially, she kind of talks about all these things we talk about today. She talks about feeling like her life doesn't matter. She was a cloistered nun, I believe. And people can correct me. I'm not a historian by any stretch of the word. But who in her journal, she talked about not feeling like it mattered what she was doing. So she conceptualized this thing called the little way of following God. And that when she is sweeping, when she is loving someone else, when she's feeding someone, when she is interacting, when she laughs at a joke, whatever it might be, that those are small little ways of living a big, meaningful life. And here's the thing. She lived a tiny little life in a tiny little monastery. She did not travel the world. I don't believe. She did not, you know, conquer a dragon. She did not make a masterpiece of art that, you know, hangs in wherever. What she did, she wrote little journals, and she ended up affecting tens of millions of people because she was faithful to her small life right there, that she struggled with feeling meaningful, but ultimately was so meaningful, her little way. And I think the little way, no matter if you are an actor or an entrepreneur, a CEO, or a barista or an accountant, I think this is something that all of us can take to heart and start seeing our lives as meaningful, even in the here and now, in the small things, and how you speak to your wife, and how you love your kids, and how you talk to your friends, and how you, in the way you spend your days. Those are meaningful things and can be part of this, of the answer to that, that desire for a purpose that we have. So read The Little Way. It's great, short. I'm also going to bless, you know, I've blessed this before, but I feel like it's a perfect time. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, particularly the new one. I know the Danny Kaye version is great. I just, you know, I put in my world, in my context, my, culture. I love seeing it. It's by Ben Stiller, who I just think is phenomenally talented, both as an actor and a writer and a producer. But it is a really beautiful movie about a man who lives a small life and who dreams of a bigger life. And he goes hunting, or actually, you know, he's thrust into the story of hunting for a bigger life. And while he does, he has fun, he has an adventure, he ultimately ends up seeing that his life was meaningful all along. And that he starts to kind of see this new perspective of thankfulness for the life, even the small one that he had, and how meaningful it actually was to his family around him and his friends and the people. And I think it's just a beautiful exploration of that. And it's just a really fun, engaging movie. And it didn't get enough praise. A lot of people didn't like it. I really liked it for whatever reason. It just really resonated with me, particularly at the right time, right place. Yeah, so check out Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I'm going to curse. Wait, I have it written down. Hold on. Oh, wait, that's right. I'm doing my old faithful. I'm cursing one. I've cursed like a million times. And I feel like it's newly relevant because of the Oscars and all the people who got nominated and won as a result of it. But I'm going to curse La La Land. Oh, boy.
Hey!
I know the music is good. The dancing is fun. It's beautiful, beautifully shot, beautifully acted. I love Ryan Gosling. I love Emma Stone. I love musicals. So all this to say, I appreciate much about the movie. I don't hate it. What really irks me is the message. And actually, not just the message, but kind of some of the content they explore, I really think is disingenuous. So my first irk is the fantasaical view of Hollywood that it gives. Listen, I love Hollywood. I love my city. I've been here many, many years. I love the people. I love what it does. I love the aspect that makes stories. The image they give of Los Angeles is so far from reality that I feel like it should almost be sued for false advertising. Because I promise you, this movie has gotten people to leave their jobs and towns and families to go to a fantasical view of Hollywood that when they arrive, they'll be like, what is this? There's traffic. There is trash. There is buildings falling down. It is not always aesthetically pretty. It is hot. It is dusty. And so it doesn't, and that's kind of in a larger sense, it doesn't capture the reality of a place. And that's what we've been talking about today, that very often we can have this image of what following dreams will look like. And the problem is La La Lands exist to pad and inform that fantasy that is just not true. And aside from the fact that people aren't dancing down the streets, I assume you guys knew that. But again, still a fun movie. But really, my biggest problem with it is essentially it says that is more valuable to follow, you know, we didn't even touch on this, a dream that might not come true, that the chances are not coming true. It's more valuable to follow that than to love someone deeply and to commit your life to a person. And, you know, I'm lucky that I get to do both. I would give up acting, writing, everything in the world for the close relationships I have in my life. I promise you, they are more valuable, more beautiful. I love my acting, writing, and all that. Of course, I love my pursuits, my dreams, following them. But people are more important. And this movie says that people are less important than you following some dream that might or might not happen. And ultimately, the dream that we're seeing that was worth it to follow was just her being famous and glamorous. And I'm like, really? That's what we're telling people is the most valuable thing, is being famous and glamorous, not love. And I get it. Yes, it's very heartbreaking and stuff, but it's heartbreaking for a different reason than what I think a lot of people assumed it was heartbreaking for. It's heartbreaking, not just that, you know, the love didn't work out. It's heartbreaking that she chose very willfully that it wouldn't work out. And she sold that for being famous and loved and glamorous. And I think we have a lot of like old fairy tales that used to show us this was bad. You know, look at Little Mermaid. It's like, you know, she sold her voice so she could, whatever. But yeah, so I got to curse La La Land again. Sorry, everybody. Let's all get your hate mail.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. I want to jump on that because it basically tells people that the image that they have of Hollywood, that people who don't know anything about Hollywood have of Hollywood, is true. Yes, this is true. This is what actual Hollywood is like. And it tells people, yes, the belief that you have that it's better to pursue a kind of glamorous career and leave behind a real love and relationship that you have. It's better to leave because that you can be replaced, where your dream, your big dream that you have for your career thing, can't be replaced. And they really do validate in a bittersweet way, but still validate that that's true. Which, again, look at the statistics. The number one thing predictor of happiness is personal relationships. Like that's not a disputed thing. That's, you know, so it's and what you actually find is that if you leave behind people you had a real connection with, you often find that those connections can't be replaced. And that so yeah, it does. I think that's an excellent. It deserves, again, I have my own problems with just the third act not making sense because they try to make it sound like the reason that they didn't work out is because he pursued security over dreams, when that's not true. Like the reason was because they couldn't have dreams each other, but it turned was because he pursued security over dreams. So it makes no sense. The last third act makes no sense. So I have trouble with a writing standpoint. But yes, that's on a message standpoint, it was very toxic. I'm gonna run through mine fairly quickly. I am going to by the way, feeling bad, like I have to start reading more books that are relevant to my podcast, because Nathan keeps doing books as busts and curses and I'm over here like reading things but none of them like fit with our topics. So anyway, but I'm gonna bless again Amadeus, because again, there's the it's considered one of the greatest films of all time, and it's for a reason, even though it's like not a fun watch for me. Like I really love how profoundly it actually does portray the destruction of envying somebody else that has adoration and gifts that you, and the life and the dreams that you want to have, and feeling entitled to them to the degree that you resent God for not giving them to you. It's like for some reason God owes it to you to give that. And I think that if you're in that place, that's a place you need to work on, because even if you want to pursue your dreams of love, is like, you know, there's something about like, you know, Salieri, he didn't want to just do his work. He wanted to be the best. He wanted to get the adoration that Mozart was having. So like, I think that feeling entitled to that, that's where you're starting to feel and resentful that God isn't giving it to you, or existence isn't giving it to you. That's a problem. I think that they show that really well. For curses, again, another old curse bringing back, but this is just so endemic. I'm going to curse the movie Tick, Tick, Boom, which is the Andrew Garfield thing, movie about Rent. Again, there's artistic aspects of it that I like, but it is so insufferable. I have never watched a movie that has such obvious and utter contempt for people who have ordinary jobs. You know, there's an entire song that Andrew Garfield sings in a diner that he goes to every day. That's where they serve him. And him showing contempt, like, look at these people in this awful, disgusting life. And, you know, and the contempt.
Wait, can I get some fries with my shake?
Yes, exactly. And the contempt that he shows for the job that his friend has, that, you know, and he says, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, doing things for businesses. We should be making art. And of course, his friend says, just what the world needs, more art. And of course, he's like, yes, that's the thing. There's this worship for this, only this kind of life. And of course, the person ended up doing Rent, which is this utterly morally bankrupt play about how it's better to, like, steal from other people than it is to pay your bills. Anyway, so there's a whole other thing like that. But I think that level of contempt for the people who go to every day to jobs that cause the lights to come on, I think is one of the most toxic things that of our modern day. And so that's why I have a very strong curse for TikTok. Again, if you want to do things like I do and Nathan does, that's great, but only do it if you have the attitude of thankfulness for the people who are, like, serving you at the diners and things.
Well, and on that note, as we wrap this up, I want to quickly just say thank you. If you have a job as an accountant, a barista, I've used those two a lot, but any other job, marketing, sanitation, whatever it is that you consider ordinary, I promise you, it might not feel like that matters in the world, but I promise you it does. I promise you, you giving people coffee matters and it makes society better. I promise you that you cleaning up streets or plunging toilets makes the world more beautiful. You are literally a beauty maker. And I promise you that you doing accounting keeps people's lives sane. And we couldn't live without you. I love making art and acting and writing and stuff, but really the only reason that artists or dream followers can exist is because people faithfully do really important and valuable work. And so even if you end up leaving or whatever, the quote ordinary jobs are so very valuable, and we are incredibly, incredibly thankful. And don't think for a second that artists don't depend entirely upon people keeping this world going, and how valuable and beautiful that is. So thank you.
Yes. So anyway, thank you so much again also for listening to us. And if Nathan, if people want to, listen more and to engage more with what we do, where can they get in touch with us and where can they get in touch with you?
They can go to theoverthinkersjournal.world where they can find out more about their hosts and say they can send us all their love and hate mail. Also head over to our online private Facebook group called The Overthinkers. If you want to get in touch with me, go to nathanclarkson.me or search my name, Nathan Clarkson, on any of the socials. I will also do a shameless plug for if you are someone who is considering going in, following your dreams, or considering a world in the creative outlets, I am a certified creative life coach. I've been doing this for years now and had many clients of all different ages and places in their journey, and helps them kind of along the way to figure those things out, what a sustainable life following your dreams actually looks like in the creative world. So if you're interested in that, please reach out. I'd love to help you take those next steps, or at least investigate what that life would look like. But aside from that, read my book, Finding God in Hollywood, and I think you'll find some interesting things that we talked about here today in that book. And it might give you just a little more insight into a different kind of life than yours. But Joseph?
I'm going to echo that as somebody who is Nathan's friend, I can attest at how good he is at actually helping you do the investigative work in your life about that. So definitely check out his coaching practices. If you want to get in touch with me, of course, you have my website, josephholmstudios.com. I'm on any of the socials as well. And of course, I'm writing for Religion Unplugged, Christianity Today, Religion and Liberty, Relevant, all these different magazines. So if you want to check out my work, Google me and go to those places and see the stuff I'm writing about. And thank you for reading them, because I am helpful to know that I'm adding value to your life in that way. Thank you, yes, again, everyone, for joining us today. And remember, if it's worth thinking about, it's worth overthinking about.